Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun, a Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talking Sopranos with Steve Sharipa and... Just kidding, that doesn't exist. Thank you so much for listening once again. Just want to remind you to please give us 5 stars in review. I swear to God, dude. I've just like, we've been podcasting so far with a lot of people.
I disagree with Matt. Just do what you want. Like, if you don't want to leave a review, that's, you know, live your truth, man.
Vince, this is, I need us to present a united front to our children here. And, you know, this is like we're co-parenting all of our piggies together and we need to both decide.
I think that, they need to at celebrities and tweet at them, go on Pod Yourself a Gun, like, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm also okay with that. Like, if you're someone
Billy
who's
Crystal,
like,
go on Pod Yourself a Gun.
Yes. Right. Yeah. But I would love it for you guys to just do that. That would be great. Yeah. I mean, in lieu of like, if you can't do a review because you're like, you have an Android or something, like then please go on Twitter or Instagram and just at hot celebrities, like mostly hot girls. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or just like say to them like, hey, you know who's hot, and then tag us. That would be sick. Also, feel free to go to patreon.com/frogcast to get our bonus episodes of the Frogcast, as well as there's the $8 tier in which we will give you a shout out and a mafia nickname at the end of the episode. So patreon.com/frogcast, please do that. And that's all the calls to action up top. See you next week. Just kidding.
Bye.
Yeah, goodbye. Today, Vince and I are presenting a very fun episode from season 5, episode 3, Where's Johnny? And our guest for this wonderful episode of The Sopranos, you know him from the Sup Doc podcast with Paco Romaine and George Chen. Ladies and gentlemen, Paco Romaine is here.
Yay. Call me Feech, dude. Call me fucking Feech.
I'll call you Feech then. What's up, Feech Lamont? Like, thank you for coming on, Paco. We really appreciate it.
I have been wanting to do this podcast before you even started it. That's how
nice.
That's how much I love this podcast. And I love The Sopranos and I love you guys. So
thank
there's a lot
you,
of love
buddy.
There.
Mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm, all the mm-hmm. things that you love. It's Sopranos, it's podcasting, it's Matt yeah. Lieb and Vince Mancini.
I love you guys as much as I loved Karen's last CD.
Oh, damn. That's a lot.
Rest mm-hmm. in
peace. You want to put us... You want to... Yeah, very good.
Rest in pasta.
Paco, tell me, you know, quick little interview here. I do this with every guest. Some people say I'm the best Sopranos interviewer of all time.
That's what
I've
heard.
Do you like The Sopranos?
I love The Sopranos. Sick. Yeah. Although I pronounce it Sopranos.
Oh, do you?
Soprano. Yeah. Where, not Soprano.
You're from the Midwest, right?
I'm from the glorious Midwest. Yeah, that's how we say it out there.
I say Soprano, and I'm from California.
You're from Fresno.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, well, see? Not Soprano.
But they say Soprano on the show, and I feel like I would have said it anyways. I don't know. I mean, you know, I think there's one correct way, but I don't. You know, I'm not going to judge you.
Yeah, right. You don't subscribe to it.
No.
I love the Sopranos. Love them to death.
Did it come out? Were you a fan while the show was on the air?
Yeah. Sure was. I think I started watching in 99 or whenever the fuck it first came out.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
You had that
fucking premium cable early on.
Fuck yeah. It's the only reason anyone signed up to HBO in the late 90s.
That's true.
There was nothing else on.
Yeah. I mean, they had Arliss.
There was Dream On.
They had Dream On. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. But nobody remembers Dream On.
What was Dream On?
I don't know Dream On.
What's Dream On?
Brian Benben, and he had dreams.
That's not a name of a person. It is. Brian Benben.
And sometimes his dreams had naked ladies in them.
Yeah, a lot of times with big boobies.
Yeah.
Wait, but what was it? What was it a show about?
There was a lot of stock footage. It was like when splicing stock footage to illustrate people's mindset was still like new and novel. It was a good show, though. Mm-hmm. It was funny.
It was awesome.
What was it about?
Dude, I just told you. This guy, he's a
guy. It was about a guy who dreamed about titties?
Sometimes. I'm not always about titties, but, you know, sometimes other stuff, too.
Wow, this is blowing my mind. I don't remember this show,
but... situation comedy about the family life, romantic life, and career of Martin Tupper, a divorced New York City book editor played by Brian Benben.
Bro, I'm sorry. His name was... Is there a hyphen there?
Nope.
No.
It's Benben.
Brian Benben.
Capital B-E-N-B-E-N.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fun name. Super fun name.
Brian Benben?
Benben. Yep. Brian Feech Benben.
It was created by the creators of Friends, which I didn't know until just
his
now.
Last name was?
No, well, yeah.
They would like workshopped it in the writer's room. Like, what is the simultaneously the least and most forgettable last name of all time?
Did they were going to call it the one where we name him Benben.
It was right before lunch, and people were like, good enough.
Good enough.
It's good enough. Name. Whatever.
Yeah. I didn't know that. The people that created Friends created Dream On.
Yeah, Marta Kaufman and David Crane.
Wow. I didn't know that. Yeah, that was also the only reason to get HBO at that time too, was Dream On. But then it was the Sopranos.
Sopranos and
Six Feet Under, and then of course John from Cincinnati.
John from Cincinnati. This is I mean, you guys, that's a show I'll never forget. It was so good. So did you, how many times have you rewatched it? Are you one of those guys who likes to do, did you say eight?
I think I'm on my eighth rewatching.
Wow. Yeah. You like it.
I like it a lot. I mean, I even have, the box sets. I have the DVD box sets as well, but now I don't need them because it's all on the worst app ever. The HBO Max app.
It's on that. I can't believe they made such a bad app. It's wild.
The worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
On the phone? You're watching it on the phone?
No. Even on like a smart TV, it's like impossible. Yeah. No, you have to search to get anything. Yeah, it's so awful.
And it's very worst. Laggy. Yeah, it sucks.
It's very laggy. Horrible UI. Horrible experience. I have it on my PS4 and it crashes constantly.
Yeah. It's crazy. Fucking sucks. It's crazy how much it crashes. This is like old technology. You haven't figured this out yet?
Who greenlit that?
I don't know. Some
who
idiot.
Let that go? Some dumb idiot.
Idiot.
Some idiot who's probably younger than
Ben
us.
Ben. Yeah,
probably Ben is high up in the world now.
Yeah. I don't know. This is my eighth. I think this is my eighth rewatching of the entire series. Sometimes I get bored. I don't want to. I'm like, what should I watch? I'm like, fuck it. Go back to The Sopranos.
Yeah, I feel you. I do the same thing. It's nice background stuff. Although I'll be real with you guys. So I had the flu like a week or 2 weeks ago. I forget time. And I just randomly was like, put on an episode of Game of Thrones, and then I just started rewatching. Now I'm just like, rewatching Game of Thrones. So that'll be my new rewatch thing.
That could be. I tried to rewatch the Game of Thrones, and I just couldn't get through the first like three episodes. I was like, can't do it.
Well, the first couple are hard. Some of the harder ones to get through, I would say.
Yeah, they feel very English.
Yeah, you don't know anybody yet. You're like, oh, look at all these names. Isn't that a million names?
It feels very like Knights of the Round Table, and you're just like, this is, why would anyone watch this?
And then
at some point you see your first like titties, and you're just like, oh, I get it.
I'm in. Yeah, then I'm in. Yeah. It's like the dire, like when they find the dire wolves, I think that's even episode one. I don't know.
It is episode one.
I was like, blah. I don't want to do this again. It's been too soon. Because the thing with me is I always forget, like, season one through three, I kind of forget what happens every fucking time I watch it. I'm always surprised. And then I always see things I've missed before, stuff that I've never picked up on. And
yeah.
It's a deep fucking show, man.
Which we're talking about Sopranos again.
Yeah, we're back.
Yeah,
to
it is. Yeah, Sopranos is something that you can kind of like rewatch a bunch of times and find out new things to add to the lore. And who doesn't love lore, you know?
Psh, I love lore.
Gotta love lore.
Oh, so much.
But this isn't a podcast about lore. It kind of is. This isn't a Game of Thrones podcast. No, this is a Sopranos podcast. It's Pod Yourself a Gun. And of course, we cannot start the episode without first playing the theme song. Pod. Pod.
Pod.
Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. Alrighty, Roo, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else. Today, we are going to be talking about, from Season 5, Episode 3, Where's Johnny?
Where is he?
Where's Johnny?
Where'd Johnny go?
Where did he go?
Where's little Johnny?
Hey, where are you? March 21st, 2004 is when this came out. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
With Carmine's passing and Feach's arrival, turf wars are breaking out around New Jersey. Junior's mental health, meanwhile, starts to decline.
Nice. Yeah, this is a episode about mental health and wellness.
Uh-huh. It is.
Yeah. It is. Vince, what was happening at the time that this episode premiered?
Yeah, that's right, Matt. You know, we can't evaluate any art without knowing the cultural context in which it was produced, as you know.
As I've been known.
And for that, we go to the Remember When machine.
Walk, walk, teddy, daddy, bop, bop, shoe, bop. Remember then.
Remember.
Remember when it's the lowest form of conversation.
We're taking you all the way back to March 21st, 2004. Just the heady, we'll call it the dog days of the aughts, I would say.
Sure, you know, sure.
Like, oh, yeah.
Like, it was pretty clear that we were on this shitty path that has led us to now by this point, even though it was still new and fresh, you know, the world being shitty at that point.
Yep.
Some of the stories that were big, or just that were stories at the time. This one's from the New York Post. I'll take Paris. The Hilton heiress lights Seth's fire on the OC.
Whoa.
Wherever Paris Hilton goes, trouble follows. And when the vixenish hotel heiress shows up this week on the OC to lay a big wet kiss on Seth Cohen, it's Seth's girlfriend, Summer, who seethes with jealousy.
Turn around. That's a story in the newspaper?
Oh, that's it's the Post. So let's
New York Post. Gotcha.
Turnaround is fair play, however, as Summer gets distracted by a young actor, Grady Bridges, guest star Colin Hanks, son of Tom, who has invited the whole gang to his birthday party.
It is I, Colin, son of Tom. I'm sorry.
Well, that's Game of Thrones, I think.
Bring out your dead.
Wait, here comes Chet.
Oh my god. Yo, what's up, yo.
I do think Colin Hanks looks like a guy who collects corpses. Like, he's got that look.
Yeah, he's weirdly more creepy than his insane white boy brother. There's something about him that where I'm like, I get Chet Hanks.
Chet is an archetype that we know. He's the rich kid party son, you know.
Yeah, like, he's a party boy. He likes hip-hop culture because he doesn't have culture, so he's just like, this is culture. And but then Colin, I don't know much about him other than being Tom Hanks' son and being like, you know, a competent actor, so I just am like, yeah, he probably hit someone with his car.
He's tall and lurky, That's what I know about him.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
He's got a lurky look to him.
He's got a lurky
look. A little lurky Lou.
He's a lurky Lou.
Yeah, a little lurky Lou.
Other stories. Jimmy Carter savages Tony Blair and George W. Bush.
Nice.
Jimmy Carter, the former U.S. president, has strongly criticized George Bush and Tony Blair for waging an unnecessary war based on lies or misinterpretations.
Well,
you got to give credit where credit is due to Jimmy Carter. The right? dude is just always on the right side of history. You know,
sort of. Yeah.
I mean, after he was president.
After president.
I'm not even sure what he was doing while he was president. I remember it was something along the lines of letting people smoke weed in the White House and thinking, oh, that's something.
Yeah.
That is.
You know,
yeah, that's something.
That counts.
In an interview with The Independent on the first anniversary of the American and British invasion of Iraq, Mr. Carter said the two leaders probably knew that many of the claims being made about Saddam's weapons of mass destruction were based on imperfect intelligence.
Yep.
He said, there was no reason for us to become involved in Iraq recently. That was a war based on lies and misinterpretations from London and from Washington, claiming falsely that Saddam Hussein was responsible for the 9/11 attacks.
Yeah.
Check, check, and check.
I think that President Bush and Blair probably knew that many of the allegations were based on uncertain intelligence.
Or lies. Yeah. I think they call them lies.
Yeah.
Like deliberate. You know, misinformation.
And we're just now today leaving Afghanistan, which is
kind of,
it tells you how fucking long this has been going on.
It's very exciting times for us.
Yeah.
It's perfect timing. We just won that war. So,
yeah, it's good. We just did it.
Mission accomplished.
We just did it. We were waiting.
Another headline from the Post. And I don't, this is a nice 2000, this is a very 2004 headline. It pays to be gay. The L word.
Oh my God!
Pits Showtime against HBO.
Oh, the L word.
And
right.
I have to point out that Pays, the S on Pays was a dollar sign.
Yes.
Oh, fuck yeah! I'm horny now.
Yeah.
With a
stable of hot original shows, most notably the hit lesbian-themed show The L Word, Showtime, once viewed as an also-ran among premium cable networks, is starting to generate considerable buzz within the entertainment world.
People are like, let's give this Showtime a little looky-loo.
Showtime
a
is banking on the L-word. That's what the L-word actually stands for.
The L-word is lurchy-loo.
Mm-hmm. To become Showtime's own Sex in the City, the hit HBO show that recently aired its final episode. It's the most beautiful cast of women on television, brags Showtime's chief executive officer, Matt Blank. Cool.
Uh-huh.
From Friends?
The L Word, along with its other show, Queer as Folk, has placed Showtime at the center of the rise in popularity of gay-themed entertainment. Witness the explosive hit Queer Eye on NBC's Bravo.
Yeah, man. They were greenlighting a lot of queer shows at the time. Mm-hmm. I remember, being like, thinking to myself, like, I'm not going to pay for Showtime to watch them, but...
No.
When they come out on DVD.
I respect that.
I remember thinking I respect the fact that they're making it.
So the top movies in the country, Shrek
2. Is that the whole article? There's not tell me more.
You want me to finish the article?
Tell me more about Queer as Fuck, dude. Okay. I want to hear about it.
Okay. Showtime's push towards making its own mark comes at a time when HBO is not only seeing the end of Sex and the City, but also nearing the end of The Sopranos, which recently entered its fifth season. HBO plans to wind down the series after 6 years.
Well, it takes a little longer than that because they film it and then they just hold on to it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Clearly, we're always compared to HBO, Blank says. The fact that some of their shows are going off the air gives Showtime a chance to grab a greater share of attention in the media. Viacom, yeah. Showtime. Yeah, do you want to read the numbers? Fine. Top movies in the country were Shrek 2, right. Troy, Van Helsing, and Mean Girls. Boy, Van Helsing, that was a movie that sucked.
That was pretty bad.
That movie was bad.
Troy was sick, though. I remember loving Troy. Yeah.
They're all Greek. It's all Greek to me, you know?
Hey, we're having fun.
Now let's do it.
Top pop song is still Burn by Usher. And the top rock song is still Cold Hard Bitch by Jet.
Cold Hard Bitch.
Again, certified banger in my opinion.
It's very good.
Can you sing some of it? I don't know if
cool
I can.
Yeah, sing it. Bitch, just a kiss on her lips, and she was all waiting. Give me. That's it.
All right, okay. Do another one.
Bam, bam.
Yeah.
You want me to do a little more guitar?
No, I've heard enough of it, and I don't want to hear anymore.
Oh, just because I don't have an auto-tune, Matt. Sorry.
How dare you, dude? I don't do everything with auto-tune. That's unbelievable that you would even say that.
But that's that was basically the Remember When machine. I think we all remember at this point.
Yeah. I remember the time very well. It was a very amazing time in American history.
Girls' eyebrows were thin. Their pants were low. And armpits were big. Yeah. And
you could see the girls' cum gutters, whatever the girl version of a cum, or like that kind of the upper pussy area. Yeah, yeah, you know, yeah. I loved that. What does that stand for?
The upper pussy. Oh, area.
Upper. Yeah. Okay, I got it. But yeah, no, shit was hot back then. Mm-hmm. War was sick.
You had to trim the top of your pubes off so they didn't come out the top.
But you kept the rest really hairy. Yeah. Like that.
That was what I. Yeah.
Yeah. The border.
Innocent times, man. 2004. Yeah. Those are in it. Wasn't John Kerry was in it? Wasn't he at that point?
Yeah, at that point he was like, people were like, this is our guy.
This is our dude right here. Yeah.
Yeah, he had just like won the nomination.
This guy's cool. He was in a war. He like wins surfs.
He's related to Heinz ketchup or whatever.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He married into the Heinz fortune. God damn, I fucking hate Democrats so much.
I know. They're the worst.
Oh, God damn it. Why did they do that? Like the fucking slam dunk of like a fucking election, beating the guy who like lied us into Iraq. Mm-hmm. And we're like, let's get the Heinz guy.
Let's do the Heinz guy.
So today, like we said, we're talking about the episode Where's
the
Johnny?
They put too many... they had a bunch of misleading ads on Friendster, and it really fucked up that whole election.
That's true. That's right. I remember that.
They were creating fake lolcats.
MySpace accounts.
Yeah.
They were. Huh.
I can has four more years, and people were like, "Oh man, I guess we got to re-elect Bush."
It's funny when the cat doesn't use proper grammar.
We thought it was
funny. He was actually just Russian.
Yeah, exactly. Funny. That's why I didn't use proper grammar. English was a second language. First language, fucking Russian. Dude. People don't know that about that time.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyways, we're talking about Where's Johnny, season 5, episode 3. Like Vince said, you know, there's a war going on between, you know, fucking Lil Carmine and Johnny Sack. And, you know, turf wars are breaking out around New Jersey and mental health and blah, blah, blah. It's a boring synopsis, which is why every week I like to present to you my personal Bada B stories about this episode, which I will present to you now. Vince, it's a clip. Sorry.
So then who is the heir with Carmine in the ground? Tony is living off the crumbs. Junior's head has collapsed. Now he's asking random black people that he sees. Where is Johnny? Where is Johnny? Where is Johnny? Season 5, episode 3.
All right, we're halfway there.
Halfway.
Tony never had the makings of a varsity athlete. Tony suggests doing a triumvirate. Janice is pretending to cook some dinner. Again, Lorraine tries to collect, but then Philly shows up and she's like, wait, 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 a second cock. Where is Johnny? Paulie fights speech. Tony B does laundry. Tony never had the makings of a varsity athlete.
What that's up, great. Bitch?
It's a great choice. Name... I feel like I was bumping that song a lot in 2004. So,
really yeah, no.
Yeah, is that just the karaoke version? Or did you play?
No, yeah, that was me doing all of the instruments. No, it's not. It was the karaoke version.
You Prince?
Yeah. You know, some of them are
Prince
more rushed.
To... Dipshits.
All right, everyone suck a dick.
Yeah.
All right? You guys can get your cock sucked like Lorraine.
Like from... Lorraine wants to?
Yeah. So
I feel like this is a great episode. I feel like this is a very thematically streamlined episode, which
yes,
you don't it didn't feel like there's a lot of wasted scenes in this.
No, yeah, and the A, B, and C stories, like all of them connect in this way that is it just keeps the momentum going the whole time. Like this is one of the, like, this is a sleeper favorite episode for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I just, like, this is the season's best so far, even though it, like, it's not necessarily the most memorable one when you're, like, trying to look back on, like, all your favorite episodes. A lot of that is, like, the obvious fucking ones, like, White Caps,
when memorable
right?
things happen and, like, yeah.
Right, yeah. Like, you know, you think of people's deaths and blah, blah, blah. But this one is just, like, it is fucking, it's... hilarious, it's dramatic, it makes me fucking cry at the end. It's got everything. It's got all the good jokes, and
it's got a lot of good jokes.
Yeah, and some of my favorite Polly stuff happens. It's just, it's so good.
When you know what happens, when you go back and watch this episode after you know how the entire thing wraps up,
sure,
you can now see how big this episode is, what a linchpin this episode is, because it's literally laying the course of what's about to happen for the next two seasons.
It really is. It's an important episode for like what the relationships are going to be like moving forward with a lot of the characters interpersonally, but also like what's going to happen between New York and New Jersey.
And I think like thematically, this is very clear that it's a conflict between like, it's a conflict between mobsters who are lying to themselves that what they're doing is some sort of public service, and then gangsters that have no illusions about what they do. And, you know, if you are still lying to yourself, there's a good chance you might get whacked by the ones that are not lying to themselves.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know,
you really get the sense that Polly thinks he is the Godfather from the Godfather movie, walking around the neighborhood with his jacket on his shoulders and his arms not through the sleeves for some reason. You know, drinking an espresso and just sort of waving his ringed fingers at all of the grateful townspeople who thank him for all of the nice things he does for his neighborhood.
He reminds me a lot of people who pretend to be big shots in L.A.
Walk of life.
Yeah, in any walk of life, but like in my particular experience, like people in stand-up who you meet and you know, they'll you know, kind of like brag a little bit, but then they'll tell you how they can help your career.
Right.
And you're just like
the noblesse oblige of, you know.
Yeah. They're clearly not going to follow up with you on anything, but they'll be like, oh, yeah, no. I know the booker for fucking Jimmy Kimmel. So like, just I'll put in a good word if you want. And I'm just like, you're not going to do any of this. I don't know why. Like, you don't have that power. Otherwise, you would be not at this open mic right now.
Wait, are you saying there's people in L.A. that are fake? Is that what you're saying?
You know what? I hate to be the first person to ever say this, but yeah, I'm starting to think.
Wow. Damn it.
Wow.
The entertainment industry is filled with fake people. But yeah, like this is an episode where you see Pauly trying to, I think I love that for Pauly, his flexing is always like just old people and like people he not even like went to high school with, but like who his mom knows.
Yeah,
like
right. I think part of mother. It is that he's like he's a lifelong bachelor kind of guy, so he's still looking for a pat on the head from his parents' generation.
Yes,
like because he doesn't really have other people to try and impress. Right. I mean, he does, but like he's still in the mode where he's trying to get a pat on the head from mom and his and their friends.
Yeah, it, I think for him that is like that is his modus operandi for being a gangster a little bit. It's like it's not to necessarily, you know, get, he doesn't want to be the top tier guy. Like he likes being a soldier and he likes the respect involved in it, but he wants to like he wants to help out old people. Like that's kind of what his whole thing is, like making sure that his mother is well taken care of. And,
well, that's his best friend. His best friend's his mom, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's very sweet and sad at the same time.
Yeah, and hilarious. Like that's the that's what's funny about Polly is that like he doesn't recognize what a piece of shit he is. He thinks he's like a really great guy, and that's what's beautiful about
him. Yeah. Yeah. Even and he
even as he's just like unabashedly chiseling random people, he truly thinks in his heart that he's doing them a favor.
No, it's a favor. That's like the amazing thing about the way that The Sopranos kind of like shows how these chiselers like work and how they view themselves is that they really do believe that they're doing you a favor by like taking 2% of your business and you know, like helping you, you know, fucking like just trap you in a debt spiral. And they're like, well, it's an honor to be trapped in a debt spiral by someone who commands as much respect as me.
Yeah, you're on my team now. We're part.
Exactly.
We're buddies.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
we're but
how that works.
Yeah. Don't exactly. you want to be on my team?
But Tony Sirico, you have, I mean, that dude is such a good actor.
He's really good. He's
he
like,
is such a good actor, man.
Yeah. He's just one of those guys who you're like, I mean, is he, was he an actual gangster? I mean, does anyone know the history of Tony Sirico here? Was he an actual guy in the, you know, in the mafia? Cause he feels like he, I don't know. Like
Sirico was convicted of several crimes and had been arrested 28 times, including for disorderly conduct, assault and robbery before taking up acting. On February 27th, 1970, he was arrested at a restaurant and found with a .32 caliber revolver on his person.
I love it.
In 1971, he was indicted for extortion, coercion, and felony weapons possession, convicted and sentenced to 4 years in prison, of which he served 20 months at Sing Sing.
Wow.
Damn.
So I was going to say, I think I heard he was one
That's
of the few
That's the same thing
them.
As Ben Ben. I'm it's, sorry.
Yeah, Sing Sing is Ben Ben.
Yeah.
Yep. I think I remember reading that he was the one of the few actors that actually had a criminal past. But he's such a, like, if you watch his reactions, that dude can turn on a dime. He can do, like kind of sad to his mom, then looks up and is kind of pissed off because now he has something to do. And then he has, like, this quizzical look of, like, ah, this might not fucking work. Like, he's a great actor.
So let's get into the Feech and Polly storyline. So we start out in this storyline where Feech has just picked up Tony B and
Robert Loggia, man.
Yeah, Robert Loggia.
I think this is his most effective episode because I don't like I think he didn't do a great job in some of the a lot of the season and a lot of his scenes that he's in. But I mean, it's really hard to play, you know, an intimidating man of his age because he's kind of a frail old man by this point.
Oh, sure.
But because of the way he does rage so well, like he really throws himself into that ass kicking scene. And he made me believe that I'd be scared of him just on account of him being that filled with rage.
I don't understand. He's a fucking old man. Like, take him down. Kick his ass.
When he comes up to you and just kicks you in the nuts out of nowhere.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true. I forgot he kicked him in the nuts. That's such a low blow. He can't do that.
Hey, it's the mafia. They can do what they want. Hey,
it's Feech. So,
by the way, if I get in a fight, that's going to be my first move. Like,
your go-to?
If you back me into a corner, I will absolutely kick you in the nuts.
Yeah, I think it's fair game if there's like, if it's a street fight, like someone's like, because I don't want to get into a fight, period. So if I have a chance to just get you right in the nuts, I'm going to do it. Yeah. I feel like I'd miss. That's my
You just swing and miss and then
I would like
beat
kick
your ass.
Up and then I'd be like, well, that was my chance. And then I get my ass kicked.
It's the arm breaking that really did it for me. I'm like, he didn't have to break his arm. Like that's come on.
Yeah, hey. he's just a vicious animal. That's his whole thing.
He is a vicious.
So I have a clip of Feech and Sal having their altercation.
Oh.
It's called Feech and Sal.
My nephew does the lawns in this neighborhood. I've been working this neighborhood for 26 years.
Are you fucking deaf? I said my nephew has this area. Gary LaManna.
Well, fuck off, huh? But I'm busy here. You want me to fuck off? How about I fuck off all over your stupid fucking face? You fucking mutt, huh? You don't work this neighborhood!
Christ, we're on parole.
Oh, man.
I love, how about I fuck off all over your stupid fucking face? Like, not a line that I would say makes any sense or makes you look tough, but when Robert Loggia says it, you're like, the last thing I want is for him to fuck off all over my face. I
mean, don't want it.
It's about the passion more than it's about, you know.
It's a lot of passion.
The logic of it. Like, earlier in the season, he would sort of go into that rage mode just when he was telling, like, a funny story, which... I don't know. Yeah. It didn't work as well, but in this, when he's threatening someone's life, boy, yeah, it really, really works. He sold that whole scene.
It does. And I love Tony B's reaction to that is, come on, man, we're on parole.
And he's smoking. And I like that it took him quite a while before he even said anything. He'd already been kicked in the nuts.
Right, yeah. Well, he's like, oh, I mean, Tony B in this episode has a bit of like, you know, he's obviously been in prison for a long time. He was already in the mafia, you know, for a while. So it's clear that like his reaction to like seeing casual violence is kind of just like, oh man, I guess this is happening.
He's seen that 100 times a day for the last 10 years.
Exactly. So to him, it's no big deal. Which actually leads me real quick to talk about the opening scene, in which Tony B enters, the Bing, and he's, you know, collecting the dirties. It's a strange scene in that like Tony is just doing a fuck ton of exposition right off top. But it ends with Tony just doing random violence to the bartender again.
Georgie, he's so mean to Georgie. Georgie's his constant punching bag.
Yeah.
He's always fucking punching Georgie.
Like, he's literally just punching him. And I have a clip of that.
It's hard seeing you like this.
What, working? With a real job?
What, working? Anyway, so look, I draw that shit. Could have just as easily been me that went away. When I was going to be there that night of the hijacking.
It ain't like you came away totally unscathed.
No, a couple of goons jumped me and cut my head open. I couldn't go. Still.
It could have killed you. You ended up in the ER.
That's 16 stitches. You got 15 years.
You always were a lucky fuck.
Well, that's not completely true. I got other sorrows in my life. Like him, for example.
I love, like, just he hits him once. And then he, in order to just like, you know, put an exclamation mark on his point, he hits him two more times. Georgie's just getting beat up. And Tony B has this look where he's laughing. And all I can think is just like, he's hitting him kind of like a big brother would hit a little brother the first time. The second two times, he's like really trying to hurt him.
Right. Like, he needs a reaction.
Yeah. He's like, nah, you got to be in pain, bro. And Tony B is just, it just rolls off his back. It's like, oh, Tony, always doing violence to your employees.
Why wouldn't George just quit? You know, he's been beaten by a telephone.
He's very dumb.
He is very dumb. That is
true.
And
also, but I think he gets his dick sucked a lot at the Bing.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of get it. Like, I mean, it's obviously, you know, I personally wouldn't put myself in a position to, number one, get beat up, and number two, to like force people to like pay me, like, hey, you're going to have to give me $50 and a blowjob in order to get on the main stage. Like, that's super fucked up. But at the same time, I get it. I get why he's there.
He's a riff on Lenny from Of Mice and Men.
Totally.
If he was like a Guido and worked at a strip club.
Yes, you know, exactly.
The hair is so soft, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about the strippers again. Tell me about the strippers.
She smells like coconuts.
Yeah. back to like Feech and Pauly. So Pauly then learns from Nucci. We get a little bit of Nucci.
I mean, I want to go back to the him beating up the guy scene.
Oh, sure.
So he kicks him in the nuts. Screams at his face, and then grabs him by the dick and balls and drags him over to the curb and then breaks his hand, which was both, And this is partly the genius of The Sopranos. Like, it was both really driving home the brutality of what's happening here, but also really funny at the same time. Like, every single moment of violence in that sort of had like a beginning, middle, and an end.
Yep.
And a punchline. Yeah.
It's very cartoonish. It's very Bugs Bunny-ish, yes. Cartoonish, the way they do their violence. Yeah.
And this is sort of my point about like all, we have more action movies than ever now, but there, like, people think that just shooting people fighting or them shooting each other is going to be compelling because like that's compelling. But like, if you go back and watch any good action movie, like a Jackie Chan or whatever,
right?
Like all the fight scenes are stories unto themselves. There's a punchline. It's all slapstick. Like, if you are not shooting your fight scenes like slapstick, it's going to be boring and who cares?
Yeah, more like slaps dick.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, which, yeah.
He did.
Which he did, and that's funny. And yeah, it's the Sopranos has an amazing ability to make violence like very funny in this way where you'd be like kind of horrified to laugh about it in front of people, or like, you know, in real life, if you saw it, you would not be laughing. But the way that they're able to do kind of like a Three Stooges physical comedy-esque like scene of violence and make you both horrified and crack up is like it's what makes The Sopranos good.
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't Artie Bucco actually does like a little when he comes into the bar, he's like, you know, he does a little Three Stooges move.
He does that, and he also like, I mean, we're getting ahead in the episode to bring this up, but you know, in the when he's breaking up the fight between Tony and Janice, and she hits him in the face, just the way he does that, like, oh, I got this video of my brother-in-law.
You love this video.
It's a surveillance video of him, and he's just walking along flat ground in a parking lot, and he like sprains his ankle. And he sort of drops his clipboard in anger, and then he does the exact same thing as Artie Bucco does, where he holds his bald head and is just like, and there's something so hilarious about that move after you've been hurt to me.
Yeah.
It's the Heavens to Murgatroyd moment. It's like, hey, why are you here? That's hilarious.
Yeah, so the violence is funny, but also the old people are funny. And
old people are funny.
Whenever we get a chance to see Nucci Gualtieri in action, I'm always very excited. And Paulie learns from Nucci and Nucci's friend, who I guess she's kind of like introducing, like, I guess she's going to be at Green Grove soon. And then we find out about what happened to poor Sal and how...
classic shit for old Italian ladies, for only old Italian ladies to worry about, where it's like, oh my god, isn't it such a thing that the we got a new lawn guy, can you believe it, he was such a nice man.
Yeah, he used to take my trash out. Actually, I have a clip.
Friday we have fish if you're Catholic, so that's nice.
Sounds like the Ritz. You gotta see her, Mary, she's the belle of the ball over there. Emma, rest those dogs. Hey, what's going on? Nobody cutting the lawn?
Oh, my own. Mr. Vitro, the gardener? Somebody beat him up, broke his arm.
God forbid. Poor Sal, what a nice man he is. He put my garbage cans out every time he cut my grass.
God forbid. Like,
she is the cutest.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand why you only get fish if you're Catholic, but I'm sure there's logic to what she was saying to that person.
It used to be, they actually changed the rule at some point. I don't remember when they changed it, but Catholics weren't supposed to eat meat on Fridays for a long time. And for whatever the fuck reason, fish didn't count as meat. I don't know why that is. And I think the Feast of the Seven Fishes, the Italian tradition of like eating seven different types of seafood on Christmas Eve, has something to do with that. I never actually
that's
was
wild
Catholic,
dude,
but,
that is, I had no idea about all that. Feast of the Seven Fishes, that sounds like a fucking Game of Thrones thing.
Yeah
it does.
I mean,
Ironborn definitely had that. They had to pay the iron price for all seven fish.
Yeah, all seven fish had to just be beaten with a club or some shit. Yeah, you pay the iron.
Give a
price.
Man a fish, he eats for a day. Steal a man's fish.
And murder him for his seven fish. And I guess you get to eat them, so that's sick.
But this is the jumping off point for the whole Polly storyline, which is that he thinks his job is to do favors for people and you know, make sure these nice people can still mow their lawns, which isn't at all his job, and he learns this pretty quickly. But even in the midst of it, like he takes 10% of this guy's lawn jobs.
Yeah.
And
so
he starts forcing him to do favor. Yeah. He traps him in a debt cycle, like you said.
Yeah,
basically.
He does. He first goes up to Sal and says, you know, hey, you know, don't worry, I'll get you, you know, your lawns back. You know, don't worry about this. All you have to do is pay me 2%. And Sal is like, all right, thank you. And then so he tries to have like a meeting with Feech. And I got to say, Feech and Polly together is a whole ass show that I would watch.
That's
like,
true.
It is incredible. And so I have a clip of their first meeting.
It's fucking gardener, Polly. He cut the hair in your balls, too?
He's in front of my Aunt Mary's.
Which is why he don't belong to nobody.
Oh, what do you know about who belongs to what? You've been away 20 fucking years.
Which entitles me to earn.
Which entitles you to shit. In my book, you get points for staying out of the can.
Good thing for me, then, that your book don't mean no gods to me. What's yours is yours, Pauly. But what ain't is anybody else's. Now do yourself a fucking favor and get the fuck out of my store.
That's what's yours is yours. What ain't is anyone else. That's the one of the best lines ever. I love that line.
I also love that he pulls a Trump where he's just like, I prefer people who didn't get caught by the Vietnamese. Like, he's like, in my book, you know, you get points for staying out of the can. It's just so fucked up.
Robert Loggia just has this completely different register of his voice. Like, there's scenes where
he does
where like the subtitles will say like speaks Italian, but all you hear is just like. Like the singer of Cannibal Corpse or something, where he's just like,
it is incredible. Like, it's all growls, and he's just like, like the dude is just constantly doing tube and throat singing without knowing he's doing it. It's incredible.
Well, like, you know, if you take acting classes, they tell you if you do any kind of arguing in a scene to make sure that you have somewhere to go to. Like, you don't start at 60 to go to 100.
Right.
You start at 20 to go to 60. But, like, I think Robert Loggia, like, his shifting up is in his vocal pitch, not in his anger crescendo. It's, like, in his vocal. And then... I think it's awesome how Pauly shows that he is not bright enough to actually compromise, to come to a conclusion that doesn't include yelling at each other and losing out on something. He's not like Tony. He walks in. They're like, hey, how you doing? Welcome to my bakery. What can I do? And it ends up with him getting like, get the fuck out of here. You know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing. Pauly comes into that scene just trying to be like, respectfully, you know, lay off. And, and Feech is like,
doesn't respect him. Yeah.
Yeah. And then immediately Pauly is just like, you don't know what, you know, you don't know how things are around here. Don't you fucking, you know, you were in jail for 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he does the Trump thing. In my book, I like guys who don't go to the cans.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That doesn't help.
I like people who weren't caught. Or what?
I like people who didn't get captured.
Yeah.
What a piece of shit.
What a piece of shit.
Does Pauly ever change? Is he the one character that just stays the same from season one to season six?
He's the most consistent. And it's like, and it tracks with his character completely. It is exactly like he is someone who's like stuck in the old days. He's stuck in the Remember When machine. And so,
he brags about not getting married. He brags about being single. And like, then he's like this lonely guy with plastic on his furniture.
Exactly.
I love that character.
He's cool.
He's a good guy.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line
prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
So then we, Pauly decides to take a little bit of revenge and sees Gary LaManna, who is taking over for Sal.
Bold move, and then by the way, just to go like have a meeting bold. With Feech and then immediately go like rough his guys up. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Fucking up a family member of Feech's, I thought would create a bigger kind of a stir than it did.
You'd figure, but I mean, it forced a sit down between him and Tony, and so I get it was a big deal. But what I do love about that scene is before he actually gets there, he's listening to Sun Tzu's Art of War on tape. Yeah. It is so fucking funny.
It's beautiful.
Sun Tzu.
It's Sun Tzu.
It's so beautiful, and I also like that the writers decided not to have him go looking for this crew. He literally just kind of driving by. You see his face, like, oh, these fucking guys.
Well, that's the same thing that happened with Feech. Like, Feech is driving with Tony B, and Feech actually says, "Can I be frank about Tony for a second without you? Can I trust you to be frank?" And then, Tony B like scoffs, and then he immediately sees Sal.
Right.
And so we don't actually get to see what was going to happen there, but just like watching Tony B like scoff and him see, it like made me wonder, like, was this a planned thing where he was going to show Tony B like, oh, I'm a badass. Like, I'm going to drive you past this fucking gardener I'm about to beat up. Yeah. Anyways, I don't know.
That's
interesting. I kind of thought of it as like,
I mean, I thought of it as the writers allowing for ambiguity there, because we don't really know whether Tony B is gonna be loyal to Feech, or I mean, like, we don't know how loyal he is to Tony, because Tony's kind of like his brother or whatever,
right? So, exactly. Yeah,
so like when Feech says that, you're kind of like, well, why would Tony B, like, is he gonna entertain this or not, I guess,
right?
And
yeah,
and ambiguous, you know, because they're like, there's a tree guy, he's gonna go grab him by the dick and throw him in the gutter.
Yeah, this whole episode kind of leaves there's ambiguity as to how Tony is feeling about Feech. You can tell that he keeps mentioning, whenever someone mentions Feech, he gets like, oh, Feech was here. Like, you can tell that he's like worried about Feech, which will lead into other episodes that we will be talking about in the future. But for now, the whole Pauly and Feech storyline ends after... Pauly like beats up Gary LaManna, and then is like, you're gonna give me 10%, and then steals his lawnmower, which is fucking beautiful. he's not gonna do anything with that lawnmower. And
also,
then
these guys are mowing lawns for a living. You know, they don't have a riding mower.
Yeah, no, that is kind of strange. But hey, you know, maybe there were smaller lawns. I guess
you can't. It may not fit in the trailer as well. I don't know.
Yeah. But then there's a sit down between Pauly and Feech, which I love, and I have a clip of.
And then from nowhere, he cracks the one kid's head with a shovel, and the other one he knocks out of a tree.
He jumped out the tree and come at me with a chainsaw. I got a right to defend myself, Tom.
Take it easy. Relax.
Sal Vitro's been working the area since my mom was still working at Kresge's. I should be able to help out a kid from my own neighborhood.
All right, how about this? Vitro and your nephew split the area. East the Dyer, yours. West the Dyer goes to him. It's for the broken arm. I don't give him $500.
I already told the guy 12, D.
Well, there's fucking compromises in life, Paulie. All right, make it a grand for the pain and suffering.
I mean, it's like, first of all, just him rewriting history, and it's like, he jumped out the tree and then come at me with a chainsaw. I got a right to defend myself. It's very, Israel has a right to defend itself is the first thing I thought. It's like, he jumped out of the tree to fight you with a chainsaw. Right. That's definitely what happened.
I've never noticed how much Rodney Dangerfield is in Pauly Walnuts.
Yes.
Oh. I get no respect. He jumped out of the tree. Yeah. You know, like, and I love how he's like, he jumped out of a tree and chased me with a chainsaw. And Tony's reaction is, relax.
Yeah, hey, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fucking
yeah.
relax. Yeah. You know, yeah, yeah, if yeah. my friend said that, I'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, yeah.
Tony's like, well, it's because
he knows it's all bullshit. He's like, I'm yeah. getting two fucking false stories. Although Feature's story is pretty much on the money.
Accurate, right.
But yeah, the moment was like, I should be able to help out a kid from my own neighborhood, as if like that's, you know, like
yeah, that's those the root are of it.
Right, exactly. And those people are like equally protected. And then also just being like, I already told the guy 1200. Like,
well, and then later he still gives the guy 500. Which
500
is
bucks. It's the best.
Yeah.
He gives Sal 500. You know, he made 500 off that. It's
yeah.
the best.
Which yes, is like, which always to Pauly doesn't, like, if he. If he knew that he was predatory with people, the character wouldn't work as well. But it's just like mm-hmm. he does those things almost like reflexively. And in his mind, it's still like this huge favor that they owe him for.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like his first reaction when he beats up Gary LaManna is give me your wallet. And just to immediately take the money, it's like first things first, I'm taking the fucking money out of your wallet. Probably $40. You know? Yeah. Like almost not worth it.
Right.
Like why like you don't like but
just,
but for
it's
him
it's just how he lives his life. It's like
it's how he lives his life.
It's like yeah. Al Pacino taking the screwdriver to the parking meter in Donnie Brasco. It's like yeah, he's just a cheap fuck and that's how he
yeah, exactly. It's like trying to you're just trying to siphon every last dime out of the people that you're doing violence towards.
Yeah.
So there's
another storyline with the Sunday dinner that Janice is going to and
yes.
she's getting the food from Artie Bucco's cuz she can't cook.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives Tony a means to make up with Artie. And it leads into two storylines that I think are equally interesting. Like mm-hmm. the Janice storyline, the thing that I'm fascinated with about Vesuvio and sort of about the way East Coast Italians approach food in general is like, why the fuck are they going to this restaurant all the time when the food is exactly the same as the shit that they themselves cook for Sunday dinner? Like his food is yep. so much like all the shit that they're already eating every single fucking day.
Right.
That Janice can take dishes from Vesuvio and pass them off as shit that she's cooked.
That's
what's sort of fascinating about it. Cause I remember like my editor at Up Rock, Steve, talking about being in New Jersey for a while and going to like a few different catered events and having to eat like eggplant parm 7 times in like, you know, a week. Like they really do eat like the same 10 or 12 dishes over and fucking over yes. again and never get tired of them. It's wild to me.
Yeah, no. And it is, I think it's half of it is they want to support this business. Like because they know Artie is their guy. And they want to support him. They don't even particularly love the food there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. They always are complaining about the food. And, you know, they themselves kind of admit when it's going downhill and will, like, give him suggestions. But it's, like, clear that they're doing it because they're, like, they're trying to be magnanimous. And they're also trying to, you know, fucking... They want to be
I think
a big
that's
man.
Part of it, but I also think they're just super provincial. Like they
have
an incredibly narrow idea of what food is, and like that to them is just like food.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. It's there are 12 things in life to eat, you know, and you choose between them. I mean, that's
they have the occasional Chinese dinner once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and of course they criticize Vesuvio. If I went to eat at a restaurant that made the things that I make every day of the week, of course I'd be like, well, yeah, I mean, like I get some, I have new ideas about how to do that. Or like,
right. Exactly.
Of course you're going to Monday morning quarterback it. You've made
chicken
marsala 700 times in your life.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. At this point you could open up your own Italian food restaurant, name it after a different volcano in Italy.
Yeah.
And then, and then fucking like, you know, you could have people, you know, going there and criticizing your food at this point.
It's so, Mount St. Helens.
I love it.
I mean, it's wild to me. Like, I don't even make like chicken marsala and like Sunday gravy as often as these people, and which are dishes that I love. But yeah. Even like I would never go to a restaurant to get chicken marsala. Like I can't even.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is definitely. I remember when it's like I first started kind of like making my own food. It wasn't until college. Like before then, it was like, you know, my fucking dad would make dinner and that was dinner. And everything else was just either takeout at school or fucking, you know, whatever.
Nachos.
Fast food, nachos and shit. But it wasn't until college when I started like making pasta. That I like stopped ordering pasta at restaurants because I was just like, I can't justify spending $10 on the cheapest possible food.
And to be fair, I think that may be like sort of a California thing because like California restaurants are fucking terrible at like red sauce type shit. Like,
they do not
make it well. It's always bland.
I mean, it tastes the same to me. It's always like, oh, this is like, you know, fucking Classico and spaghetti noodles. It's like not a... You know, Kraft fucking, you know, Parmesan cheese or like the fancy kind.
Yeah.
If you go to, you know, a fancy restaurant. Yeah,
the East Coast version of that is like significantly better, but also not enough better to want to eat it like every fucking day of the week like these people do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Speaking of which, I'm about to tell Francesca over text message. Can you heat up the lasagna?
The ziti.
Sorry, up the lasagna. Just because I'm realizing that I'm going to be super hungry. It's going to take 30 minutes because we don't have a microwave.
Gotta heat that lasagna slow, dude.
Yeah,
yeah.
Anyway, 250 for 30 minutes.
I love the continuation of Janice doing lasagna Ponzi schemes or doing. Yeah. You know, like we talked about that in a previous episode. Like her grift of passing off other people's food as her food. It's just incredible to the point at which like, no, this is Vesuvio. There's no way people won't recognize that it is Vesuvio.
Right. With a layer of basil right underneath the cheese.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But like for her, she's just like, she has no qualms about continuing to lie and say that she can cook.
Is she the most amoral person in The Sopranos?
I think you could certainly make that case.
Make that argument very easily. I mean, she's done so much immoral shit that like it all blends together and you just are like, yeah, she's a piece of shit. And she always, you know, this episode, they go into her Epstein bar a lot. and like her inability to... be responsible for anything that she isn't an immediate responsibility of hers.
Right.
Like, you know, when Junior goes missing, Bobby calls her to be like, you know, I can't find Junior. And then she's like, oh, he'll show up and whatnot. And he's like, yeah, I think I love him more than you do.
You do, yeah.
And, you know, later she comes by with the kids.
He says like he's surprised by it. It's like, yeah, of course you do. She doesn't love anything.
She loves nothing but herself.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, who do you think you married, dude? Yeah.
Do you think she gives a shit about her uncle? She doesn't give a shit about like her
kids. I know. Ada Turturro, man. Whew, what a phenomenal actor.
Oh, she's amazing.
She's amazing.
I mean, it's the most memorable character. Fucking top three, like top three characters on The Sopranos, top 10 best TV character
easily.
Of all time.
She steals almost every scene she's in, and she's playing
wonderful.
Against heavy actors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, literally and
right,
figuratively.
Yes. But, I mean,
they sumo wrestle over scenes.
Exactly. But yeah, I love that she finally does show up an hour later. And he's like, where the hell were you? He's like, picking up your kids.
Yeah.
And then once he's like, okay, I'm going to go out looking for, you know, for Junior. And she goes, if anyone needs me, I'll be taking a nap. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Like she's a martyr for taking a nap. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. Like her whole thing is just like, I'm tired. And it's like, you know, half of it is depression. The other half of it is just like, she just sees, she has no interest.
I mean, this is very common on the internet now where like people,
tired.
People treat being tired like it's a unique affliction only to them. Yeah. Like they're only, like, oh, I have a, I have a very specific autoimmune disease that causes me to be tired and want to take naps, and not like, yeah, everyone living in the fucking world is tired all the time.
Right. Yeah. This kind of concept too of emotional labor, which yeah. is, you know, where it's like,
yeah, it's just people want
the emotional labor of like explaining a concept that you're being vague about, you know, and to people who ask, because you mentioned it in a public forum, and like, I don't want to do the emotional labor of explaining what this tweet meant. And it's like, emotional labor.
Yeah.
Like the idea of emotional labor, I can see like making sense in certain contexts when it comes to something like a very triggering traumatic event to you personally, but it's always something like a historical fact that you're like, kind of, vaguely talking about. And yeah. then the idea of anyone asking a follow-up question, it being emotional labor to answer, and they're like, you have to pay me for this labor, and it's just like, I could Google it too, I guess.
Right. Yeah,
I just love the idea. It's like, if when I do emotional labor, I get tired, and it's like, you're just describing depression. I'm sorry. Yeah. But that's
or
what
just,
this is
like, living life
or living right. life. But it's like, I get that you're tired, the only, but
the the context that I think emotional labor makes the most sense in is driving in LA. Like,
oh sure,
because
yeah.
15 minutes of like LA driving is like 45 minutes anywhere else, just because yeah. it's like the constant I don't know, just something about yeah. it is very just like mentally oppressive.
It's taxing.
It's taxing.
It's taxing. Yeah. yeah. It's it brings up a lot of anxiety. Starting, stopping, you're not sure if you can get over, you might miss your exit. You're not yeah. sure how long the traffic's going to take. It's yeah. horrendous.
People are matching speeds with you on both sides, so you're like, I'm trapped.
It's, yeah, you can't get over. Yeah, I experience that every time I'm in LA. I'm like, fuck, I'm yeah. stuck in this lane.
Yeah.
Yet is, people still look amazing. So.
Yeah, they look hot, but it's a lot of emotional labor.
Burn, yeah. All that.
Yeah.
Labor,
let's see.
Yeah,
LA drivers are tired. It feels like
we
a tweet.
Tired.
Yeah, that feels like yeah. LA drivers, hey, drivers are tired. Tired.
Keep
yeah.
LA tired.
Exactly. So moving on,
I wanted to talk real quick about Tony making up with Artie, and then Artie moving in with
oh,
Tony.
I love it.
To
the best.
Just
yeah.
combine divorced Milhouse dad's energy. And it's
yes.
just like it's like they're like the Voltron of divorced dads mm-hmm. that are like more than the sum of their parts.
Yeah.
Right.
So
yeah, it's pretty
previously
great.
How many episodes? So right now I'm on season 4. So I'm
okay.
In my rewatch. So Carm has already kicked Tony out.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Okay. This is the season 5 is the divorced dad season. So he's just like yeah. he's got his own bachelor pad covered right. in beer. And now he like invites Artie to live there because he's, you know, alone, and
right,
he's
right,
like, you're getting a divorce, I'm getting a divorce, mm-hmm. you know, our powers combined,
we should,
and we can
team
get
up
drunk.
And wear velvet while drinking Löwenbräu.
yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Eat pizza.
Finally,
it's amazing.
No more women to tell us to turn off the History Channel.
yeah. It's pretty amazing how often that house becomes a central figure in the show. Like the, you know, yeah. his mom's old house, how often it keeps
yeah.
coming back, you know, because at one point they were going to, I almost
feel like. Is that
where
they
like,
are they, are,
yeah.
is that Tony's
yeah.
bachelor pad is the
yeah.
mom's old house?
Yeah. yeah.
That's like his basement. It's like the, what was it? Who was the basement that they hung out in That 70s Show? That's
oh, yeah.
his
yeah,
mom's
yeah.
old
Foreman's.
House is like, it's their clubhouse.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
And at one point in season 1, he's like, we already sold it. We
yeah,
sold
right.
the house, because she doesn't like being in Greenberg or whatever. He's like,
yeah,
we
yeah.
sold it, but they never, it's never gone. It just
yeah.
keeps coming back, that
no,
fucking house.
No, yeah. It's like, you know, they're doing an art, because it's kind of like Livia. She's dead, but she's not gone. You know
dude,
I mean?
I just rewatched that CGI episode with Livia, and it's like, oh my God, I didn't even notice how horrible it is.
Oh, yeah, poor you.
Poor you!
But yeah. like all the like B-roll takes of her, and she's like, nah, nah, nah. like
yeah,
it's just
no.
kind of some weird face, and it's
no,
like,
it just yeah, it's a, and they're just playing a soundboard of different lines that she has said.
right. That's amazing.
So like, let's get into kind of real quick the New York wars that are going on, because we get
Ooh.
To see for the second time ever a wonderful character named Lorraine. I forget her last name. It's not Bracco.
Caluzzo or something.
Yeah,
Uzzo.
Yeah,
Caluzzo.
Caluzzo. Right? Lorraine Caluzzo. She shows up to make a collection from a bar, and she really does like a Sheryl Sandberg lean in, which I fucking love. There's a lot of like K-Hive energy in this scene.
Sorry, you got the clip.
That's most of it.
Let me ask you a question, Dan. Say I'm some big nigga standing here instead of a woman. You still going to tell me you've got most of it?
Let's go. Chop, chop, hit a woman.
Hey, I was just thinking about you. Those Islander tickets, right?
How about this humidity?
You're right. I'm sorry. I'll pay you, okay? I'll do anything you want. I'll suck your cock, okay? All of you guys.
Suck our cocks?
Yeah.
Adios, you fucking skank. Look at this, Joey. Today's a lucky day. Only made it to the R's.
I mean, I really think that might be my favorite Philly Leotardo scene of all time. Like,
wow,
the way
it's so good.
The way he engages in fake small talk about the weather and smacks.
Pretty humid.
That's so funny.
And then
it's oh god.
And then like the one-liner, adios, you fucking skank.
Yeah, no, it's amazing.
So brutal.
I didn't realize that was supposed to be fake. Like he meant it to be a fake assassination.
Yeah. He meant it to just scare her because
he wouldn't say anything cool if it was like a real assassination.
You just get fucking killed.
He would have just stopped at the weather. He'd been like, it's pretty humid. How about a drink?
Yeah. But like, opening it with like, how about this humidity? And then smacks her in the face. Especially since like they've kind of introduced this character now. This is her second appearance. They've introduced her as this like kind of like badass, and you're kind of like watching going, this is our first like female capo or whatever, like first female made woman is what it feels like, and so you haven't seen this on The Sopranos before, and all you're thinking is like, this character is gonna be fucking badass. And David Chase does the most brilliant thing of being like, nah, she's very quickly gonna get her ass kicked and like almost murdered. She's gonna be like begging to suck their cocks, and then when they fake kill her, she's gonna piss herself. And like if you listen closely, after the gunshot, you can hear her pissing herself, and you're just like, "Fuck, this is so brutal that they would do this to this character."
Yeah.
But it feels right because she did just say the N-word.
Right, true. With the hard R.
And then Johnny Sack sort of
gives her some badass credentials.
Well, yeah, she says, "Oh yeah, she's the one that's always whacking people." So it's okay.
Never a large enough body count for Lorraine. Like you kind of get the idea that like she's a scumbag too. But I do love
I just got that. To me, that scene mostly communicated that Johnny Sack was skilled at whataboutism.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, that's what he's doing. And it's like, you know, it makes it semi-justified.
You want to talk about whacking people? No one does that more than Lorraine.
Yeah, she loves to whack people. So, you know, smack around a little bit, make her piss herself. It's no problem.
And have an extremely ineffectual, really strong dude. I guess. Like, what's the point of that guy?
Yeah. I mean, he's to look hot and probably, like, you know, eat her pussy and stuff. But, like, I don't know if he's very useful.
No, yeah. In every scene, he gets beat up. You know, and then we find out even more. So
yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, it's very fat Italians making the show, so they're trying to make the point that muscles aren't as great as you
aren't necessary.
Are.
Yeah,
I think you're right. Exactly. I think that is true. So we get the sit down between Lorraine and Tony and Angelo, and it's the first time the idea of like doing a triumvirate is pitched.
Triumvirate or whatever.
Yeah. Triumvir, whatever.
Whatever.
So he pitches it to Johnny Sack. He pitches the triumvirate, not as his idea, but as Angela's idea.
Right.
And immediately Johnny says, what is this, the fucking UN now?
The best. The best.
A great, great
Nobody
line.
Gets mad like Johnny Sack. That, I mean, again, another fucking awesome character actor.
Yeah, yeah.
And a great character that he's like, he's kind of, he's sort of like this fussy germaphobe who has a fat
who loves
fetish.
loves his fat wife. Yeah.
He loves her,
but he's also very petty and vain and quite a climber.
Yeah, yes. And clearly, you know, has been chomping at the bit to be in the driver's seat, you know, for a long time, and now it's finally his turn, and little Carmine is trying to muscle in.
He's kind of right about the little Carmine thing. He's like, you know, you got to establish a clear line of kicking up right away, otherwise you're just gonna get fucked.
It is correct. And so it's obviously a very fucking you know, tenuous situation. And we get very little Chris Moltisanti in this episode, but we get just enough for it to be perfect.
One of my notes was Christopher is so bad at gangstering, which is sort of like he's like the one who was sort of, I mean, I guess they all are, but he is very much like born into this life, and you'd think he have like the most street smarts of anyone, like having, you know, been part of this forever. He's like the heir apparent, but he's also just so incompetent at it, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, he's very bad at it, and nothing points that out more than his faux pas at the sit down between Johnny Sack and Tony about something completely not relevant to the war.
This is very important. Benny the shit. She's little Carmine, and Johnny comes up, you clam up.
You got it, Tony.
Say nothing, because you said the wrong thing.
15 minutes later.
Organize this whole fucking bachelor party. Lesbian show, whores, fucking disgusting.
Have you thought about this? Maybe you let him keep Lorraine, and you take a bigger piece of his Florida shit, the clubs.
If I wanted to worry about Florida, I would move to fucking Miami. You know, it wasn't long ago I remember you used to wait in the car. And as far as I'm concerned, you should still be there.
John, he was just trying.
Fuck, he was just. Everybody's got a goddamn opinion.
I didn't do nothing, Tone.
It was just the one thing he said, and this is very important. Just clam up. Just don't say shit. And he's got, like, Chrissy has this ego, and I think a lot of them do, where they're like, and I think this is actually a very relatable thing, where you believe that, like, you will be perceived as the most rational, smart person in the room if you try to, like, mediate an argument, you know, and, like, it immediately just backfires on him. And it was just like, you had one job, which was to say literally fucking nothing.
Right.
And I also, just to say, I love that he's describing them as best friends. We used to be close. You know, I organized his bachelor party, strippers, whores. It was disgusting.
Disgusting. Yeah. That's the best part. Just the mind takes you to so many different things. Yeah, it was disgusting.
I made his bachelor party fucking disgusting. And this is how he repays me.
Right. It's awesome.
There's also this element that recovery has given Christopher, like, this sort of false confidence.
There you go.
And he has learned the language of recovery. And so, like, in his mind, he's automatically like the most rational person in the room. He's sort of like, he's the non-college version of the obnoxious college freshman. This is his first exposure to, like, learning a new thing, basically.
Right.
And wow, so now he sort of has to go in there and, like, tell people, like, oh no, I learned this thing, and here's why you've been doing your whole life wrong.
Very astute. That is awesome. You're right. Yeah.
That's 100% true. Like, his version of going to college was going to rehab and learning how recovery works. And, like, you know, being forced to be outside of his comfort zone.
Which is just a perfect type. Like, it's the most annoying type you can be, where people have learned, like, five recovery yes. idioms that yes. they use on you all the time where you're just like, yes. Yeah. you know, if you're worried, you're not praying. And if you're praying, you're not worried.
right.
Yeah,
right.
Whatever
right.
the fuck it is.
Yeah. yeah. It's like, just try to keep your side of the street clean. Okay.
Yeah.
It's, and, you know.
yeah. Have you tried mindful meditation, John?
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed that you keep taking other people's inventory. And I feel like you should. Yeah. No, there's definitely like a version of that person, I think. Always early on in recovery, and they're always the ones who, I mean, I think we all kind of go through it where we all are like, oh, turns out I'm a fucking emotional genius now,
right.
because mm-hmm. I'm not high on heroin anymore.
Right. And I actually accomplished one thing in my
yeah,
life.
Exactly. Like every day I choose not to do heroin. I want a medal, and I also want to be a fucking motivational speaker, because clearly I am an inspiration
exactly.
to everyone.
And is there a better put down than you used to fucking stay in the car? I remember
oh,
when you
yeah.
used to fucking stay in the car.
Yeah.
That's such a great line.
It was as close to being like, get your fucking shine box as we've gotten on The Sopranos.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So finally, we get to our last and I think most memorable, in my opinion, storyline. It's the Junior Soprano is losing his mind storyline. And it starts out with, you know, there's been a lot of like hints as to like Junior's kind of like waning mental capacity. But this is the episode where you see it actually happening. Junior, we first see him turning on the TV and thinking that he is on an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh my God.
Very HBO
so funny.
Synergy.
A lot of
yes.
HBO synergy
yes.
there, dude. Yeah, it was a good way of kind of like, you know, plugging a promo for the next season of Curb in a Sopranos episode. And it was also just like so fucking funny and sad at the same time.
Yeah.
Just because you can see that like, oh, no, it's happened, you know. And this is the episode where the quote that I think will never die, one of the most well-known Sopranos quotes, I'd rank it up there with It's a Retirement Community, but he's never had the makings of a varsity athlete.
Yeah.
So I did want to discuss one part of that.
Go ahead.
I mean, first of all, great. I love that is the phrase that he keeps repeating is that.
Mm-hmm.
But second of all, at the dinner where he's talking about Tony never having the makings of a varsity athlete, his point about that is his small hands,
right.
which is the most inaccurate thing that anyone's ever said about James Gandolfini, whose fucking giant catcher's mitts for hands are featured. Like he fucking holds Valentina's head and it looks like Andre the Giant holding the Pepsi can.
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. He looks like a cartoon gangster.
Yeah,
like he looks like that big dude from fucking Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. You know, yeah. like just giant meat hooks.
I mean, like Tony, yeah. I'm sure may have had a lot of problems as an athlete, but small hands was not one of them. Let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah. But I had that scene at the Sunday dinner with the blow up because I think it's so fucking perfect.
It's a line, coach.
Star Legend says Del Mar is going to be even tougher this coming year with that Chinese kid.
Your father never had the makings of a varsity athlete.
Oh, what the hell's with you?
What?
It's not true. What is it with you and this obsession with this varsity crap? The other day you said it. And when I was a kid, you told the girl cousins the same thing. It was very hurtful.
Tony, relax. It's not a big deal.
It's undermining. And it's the kind of stuff I'm teaching my kids not to do. So I don't want to hear it again. End the subject.
Hello?
In
hey.
Here.
Hi. Hi, sorry we're late. The Tappan Zee was a nightmare.
Yeah, checking the trucks again. So coming down, I heard on the radio, looks like the Jets are going to grab that kid from Tulsa, that tight end.
All I know is you never had the makings of a varsity athlete.
Oh, son of a bitch!
What?
Did I just tell you not to say that again?
Say what?
You don't like the way I talk? Get out of my house.
Oh, here we go, Tony.
Now, Tony, shit. Get your coat. We're leaving.
I don't have a coat.
Well, then get moving, goddammit.
Will someone please tell me what's going on?
It's my last Sunday dinner here. That's what's going on.
Uncle June, was that really necessary?
He's a goddamn hothouse flower. That's his problem.
Oh, my God.
He's a goddamn hothouse flower.
I don't
That's
have a
coat. Problem.
What yeah. the fuck is that line?
Perfect.
It's so
AJ
beautiful.
Line.
Perfect AJ line. And he's so concerned because he's like, I don't have a coat. Can we leave? Or can I get up? What is happening? I don't have a coat. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty great. And just I don't know what the fuck a hothouse flower is, but I love it as an explanation for
it's a fucking out ass flow.
Yeah.
That the rhythm of that scene is amazing too. Just not being able to hear it without seeing it, you hear the rhythm of that scene, and it's so perfect. It just keeps ratcheting it up, and then it's. I love how it's it's disturbed by her, the sister, who's now a whole different actor, by the way. Like that's not the sister from season one and two.
Oh yeah, that's right.
They completely changed the sister, but
she's
like
such
they
a minor character that you. I never noticed during. The
yeah, I didn't notice until you just said it. But yeah, that's right. That yeah. they did completely change it.
Yeah, and then they interrupt that argument, which is great. And then Junior does it again. It's so perfect.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah,
it's awesome.
And yeah, he's clearly losing his mind. And then he goes missing. Bobby Jr. is looking for him. You know, his friend who set up the cable has no idea where he went. And he's just wandered back to Newark. And you see him, like, he goes to, like, this black church just screaming, "Where's Johnny?" And, like, you know, it's clear he's lost his mind. And he has this scene that I this is the most memorable storyline because I remember everything that happened with Junior in this episode. He has a scene where he and a black woman are sitting on a bench having a conversation in which I feel like literally no one, they're talking past each other. Mm-hmm. And they're having a conversation.
It's so surreal and like it lands so hard just because it's so off, but
we had relations, you and me?
It fully makes sense, but yeah, it's so spooky and
like you have no idea, like the, it's completely ambiguous as to whether do they know each other or do they not? Like you don't know what's happening, but you get the sense it's two people who are speaking two different languages who somehow found a way to have a conversation. Yeah. And I have a clip of that. It's Junior and black woman.
I mean, you really had to. What was she? The fact that she was black, was that important that you had to put it?
I'm sorry, that was just
MP3
so you wouldn't.
Three description.
Unbelievable!
Wow! Yeah.
I'm just saying, she's a black woman. That's the name.
Hello, handsome. Where you living now? Around here?
Do you know me?
Do I know you?
Jupiter Club on 6th Street.
Caught fire. That place. A lot of people died.
Do you know my brother Johnny?
You got all the looks, I tell you that.
What are you saying? You and I had relations?
Some bitch, taxi cab, run me right over my foot.
I have a car.
Want a date? I give you half and half in the back seat.
I want to go home.
Well, let me get a ride by the shelter.
I have to find my car.
You and me, we had relations? It's like, it reminds me of those, like, almost like a experimental theater you would see where there one character comes out in a spot and another comes out in a spot and they're talking, you know, they're blocked in different directions and they're just having their own monologues.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you really don't know if they actually do know each other in any way. I also want to know what half and half is.
Yeah, I was going to say, right. Like, what the fuck is a half and half? I'm so fascinated by that.
Is that a little bit of a blowjob, a little bit of a hand job? Is that, I wish I knew what it was.
That makes sense, like a little suck and whack?
A little suck and whack, probably,
It's probably a little suck and whack, and I do enjoy the lingo, but... Yeah, just all in all, that scene, I love the fact that they're having like a crazy person conversation that you don't know what's going on, but you know that they don't know what's going on either. And yet they seem to communicate somehow.
And this is the beginning of the end for Junior. I mean, this is the start. This is when everything starts to crack for him.
Everything
goes downhill.
Everything is going to go downhill. So we finally end with Tony having a quick scene with a doctor at a golf course, in which it's another like rapid fire a convenient exposition scene where you just kind of get like a doctor going, hey, by the way, your uncle's crazy and he doesn't know what he's talking about. It almost feels like something where it's like, if this were another episode, you'd be like, oh, someone set that up so that they would believe, so that he would believe that or something. Right. It just feels like a setup, but it's not meant to be. It's meant to be just like this, like coincidentally, this very convenient conversation, which leads Tony to, even though he's before this is like, he's dead to me. He said I didn't have the makings of a varsity athlete. It leads him to come back. He brings some fish and he has this amazing scene mm-hmm. with Junior that I just I love it.
Yeah,
this is
Junior's
my shit.
Crying. Junior's only crying because he's senile. I don't know. It's a bit. Yeah,
I love it so much.
Tony wants to be loved.
Yeah, but he's like, oh, I think it's so great because it's like he's like he's going crazy, and rather than, you know, fucking having good memories, all he does is like be an asshole, and it's like, you know, it's
yeah.
It's I don't know. There's something about that that's so tragic and sweet. Well, I love it.
I guess so, but I don't know. It feels like you're. I don't know. Do you require things from your uncle? Like I get it. If
but
it was
I think
his
he
father.
Was more of a. Well, he was more of a father to him than his father was.
Yeah.
You know, because Uncle Junior taught him how to play baseball. He would throw the ball with him. Like he's been around for longer than his dad.
Well, I think it's great, and I think that it's very sweet. And it's the final clip. So let's hear it.
The final clip.
What is it?
It is called Don't You
Black,
Love Me.
Black Woman in Seafood.
How dare you.
Show your former seal when you shut that freezer door.
So how you feeling?
Again, like it's such a perfect like throwaway old man moment, but it's perfect.
It's perfect. Yeah. Well, it's dad's son. They're setting
Make
up
sure
that
you
dynamic.
Form a seal.
Yeah, like what are you gonna do? Like you have no control over whether like a seal, like either the seal forms or it doesn't.
You
like,
have to push it. You have to push it.
You have to put your elbow into it.
Yeah.
Form a seal.
Heard you had a little problem.
What problem?
All right. But your doctor said something different.
Who, Kennedy?
Kennedy's your cancer doctor.
I knew that. You said doctor.
You should take your medicine, Uncle Joe. Make you feel better. Help with your memory.
Believe me, there's plenty I'd like to forget.
Yeah, you and me both.
These prairie dogs, they'll sleep during the day.
Yeah? Look, the doctor said you may not have known what you were saying.
What are you talking about?
The varsity shit. Let's assume that you didn't know what you were saying, that you forget what you say shit over and over.
Yeah?
Why's it gotta be something mean? Why can't you repeat something good?
There's the coyote.
I mean, don't you love me?
My heart.
Oh, it's so good.
Guys, I feel like cut the scene after You and Me Both, and it's just as good.
Yeah. I mean, but I don't know. Don't You Love Me? And then watching him just kind of like cry. I'm a shill. I love that shit.
I don't fully buy Tony saying, don't you love me?
I don't know. I do.
Oh, Vince, you got a heart of
Heart of stone, dude.
Yeah, this guy, this fucking guy over here.
You got
a
heart of gabagool.
That's a heart of gabagool.
Yeah,
I think it was awesome, and I think also you get the feeling that this is the same kind of conversation that Junior had with the black woman. They're kind of talking past each other.
Yeah, for sure.
Junior's talking about coyotes and about
and prairie dogs. They sleep during the day.
Prairie dogs and this is you'd rarely see Tony Soprano be vulnerable and to ask directly, do you love me? Don't you have anything nice to say? You don't see that from Tony.
No, yeah.
And I think it's brilliant that they cut on nothing. I mean, the edit is just them kind of tearing up. You don't hear anything else, and I think it's a very powerful edit as well.
I think so too. I think Vince is trash.
Dumb. I think he's dumb and trash.
His heart is filled with gabagool.
It is so much gabagool in that heart.
And I would say that in general, like if I had to rate this episode, I'd give it a B plus. Vince, what would you give it?
Oh man, that's tough. I mean, I really think this is one of my favorite episodes. Thematically strong and streamlined. It's funny, it's scary, and it's dramatic.
All of those,
you know, based on all of the things, I think I have to give it a B plus.
Oh, all right, so this is a surprise. Yeah, what about you, Paco Romaine?
I'm going to disagree with the Gabagool Heart and with the tall, lanky fellow, the lanky Hanks, meaning you. But I think it's cool that, you know, the Bacalaris are involved, that Junior was walking down Bloomfield Avenue, that Phil's brother Billy was in this. You know, there's a lot of B's, you know, there's so many B's, Bloomfield Avenue. You know what? I'm going to give it a B plus.
All right, let's do it. Let's solid B plus. We all agree that it is a B plus episode and an A plus episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. Yes. Don't you believe?
Always. Oh, it always is.
Paco Romaine, thank you so much for coming on the show.
I feel like you're Gumar. Thank you so much.
Oh, you are. You are the show's Gumar. We will fuck you and leave you.
But not
in the
like
lurch.
Valentina. You're not always just like playing pranks on us.
Yeah,
true.
No. Yeah,
so much salt.
You're on fire. Where can people find you on the internet?
Well, do people think Tony Soprano's that hot? Like those women are gorgeous. Like I don't know.
He's powerful.
He's the boss.
I guess it's the broad shoulders, huh?
And the big old hands. Yeah,
he's fuckable. I get it.
The boss with the big hands. It's another B plus. People can find me on the internet. At Paco Romaine. Yeah. And
what's the name of your podcast?
Sup Doc Podcast. If you like documentaries and two vaguely funny guys with great guests, listen to Sup Doc Podcast.
Check out Sup Doc wherever you get your podcast. Patreon.com/Frogcast. And, you know, at the $8 tier is the Pod Yourself a Shout Out tier. This week, Vince, we have two $8 patrons.
I didn't even look at them. What are they?
I just added them. Oh, I just added them now.
Bada bing.
So the first one is Scott Davis.
Oh. Oh, get him, Scott.
Scott Davis. He's like Jim Davis, the Garfield creator. We call this guy Mondays, you know?
We're calling him Mondays.
Monday. Scotty Monday Davis.
We're calling you Mondays.
Get over here, Mondays, with your big ass.
Hey, you call him Monday because he only comes once a week, this fucking guy.
That's right. Yeah, you only call him Mondays because everybody hates him. I'm sorry. And the next one is Atif, A-T-I-F.
Whoa. Earthquake. Yeah. Did you feel that?
Sure did.
Holy shit.
You had an earthquake?
I usually don't feel them that big in Fresno. That was a good one. You guys didn't feel that?
I saw your thingy shake.
Not down here.
Whoa. She's coming into the room. Yeah. It was a fucking earthquake.
That was a big one.
ATF. ATF. His name's Earthquake from now on.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's earth shattering.
His nickname's Earthquake for sure.
It's fucking all right. Earthquake.
Call this guy Earthquake because he's got a lot of faults, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, saved it.
Hello, Prieta. That's
very good.
You guys didn't feel that strong?
I'm in LA, dude. I can't feel
you're in
shit.
I'm in San Francisco. We don't have earthquakes here.
Usually Fresno, we get like the, you know, the fucking.
Your camera's shook, though. Yeah. I thought you were a joke. I thought you're like this. You're like, look.
No, but, that was wild.
Maybe.
Wild.
Yeah, it could. It's possible that like someone just fucked Justin Halpern's mom. Might have been. Yeah.
I like how your wife came in. She's like, are you still going to just podcast while we're during an earthquake?
Yeah, apparently, I am.
That's what you do.
She's like, we have kids. What do you?
Patreon.com/Frogcast. You yourself can also get a cool nickname in an earthquake. If you just go to patreon.com/Frogcast and join the Pod Yourself a Shout Out tier, which has some wonderful also Discord connectivity. I don't know how Discord works, but there's a Discord. So check that out. Frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, concerns. Vince, what's the Google voice number?
415-275-0030.
All righty, Roo, everybody. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing. Don't
stop. Ain't that the truth?
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.